I will just start in. This latest study of ours has been looking at herpes simplex 2 and HIV among non-injecting drug users in New York. And these are people who report that they've never injected. We've done hepatitis C testing on them. The hepatitis C antibodies are very, very infrequent, maybe about 10%, so that we're convinced that these people truly have not injected illicit drugs. Historically, we've seen a rapid spread of HIV among injecting drug users. Syringe sharing is a highly efficient method of transmitting HIV. We've seen incidence rates anywhere from 10 to 20 to 50% per year among injecting drug users. Heterosexual transmission is normally much, much less efficient than sharing needles for transmitting HIV. The best estimates would be that it's a factor of about 10 in terms of the relative efficiency of transmitting HIV through sharing needles compared to heterosexual activity. And the CDC has always classified needle-borne transmission as a higher risk category than heterosexual transmission. If you reported both behaviors, they would simply put you in the injecting drug use category. However, large-scale implementation of programs to reduce syringe sharing, particularly syringe exchange programs, have dramatically reduced needle-borne transmission in many cities throughout the United States and the rest of the world. This allows for increasing relative importance to sexual transmission. Just briefly to give a little background for what's happening in New York, in the middle 1990s, the city and state legally authorized and funded syringe exchange programs. The numbers of syringes increased from about 250,000 per year exchange to 3 million per year. As that happened, we saw HIV incidence fall dramatically in the city. This is STARS testing from historically collected samples. In the early 90s, we had an HIV incidence rate of just under 4% per year. That has now fallen to under 1% per year and has remained stable since the early 2000s. So that with the expansion of our syringe exchange programs, we saw a dramatic reduction in the rate of new HIV infections. However, we're seeing very high HIV prevalence among people who use heroin and cocaine but have never injected. Our current HIV prevalence among non-injecting drug users is as high or higher than HIV prevalence among injecting drug users in 89 of the 96 U.S. MSAs. Okay. This is data from two studies, a respondent-driven sampling study conducted in 2004, and our risk factor study, which interviews people coming into detoxification in New York City. And you can see that HIV prevalence is basically the same among the injecting drug users and the non-injecting drug users. It's the same for gender, the same for race, ethnicity. So this led us to wonder, how in the world are these non-injecting drug users getting infected at such large numbers? One of the potential culprits was herpes simplex 2. Herpes increases the transmissibility of HIV, increases viral shedding in genital fluids. It also increases susceptibility to HIV. The herpes lesions act as portals for entry of HIV, and it's estimated that the increased risk for susceptibility to infection is a factor of 2 to 3. And this is simply at the biological level, assuming the same behavior. This comes out of two recent meta-analyses of the relationship of prevalent herpes infection to HIV incidence in multiple cohort studies. The data I'll be presenting today comes from what we call our risk factor study. The subjects are recruited among entrants to a large drug detoxification and methadone maintenance programs in New York City. These programs serve as approximately 7,000 patients per year. We randomly rotate through the wards of the detoxification programs so that we, as far as we know, there's no bias in the recruitment. There's a structured interview and an HIV test, and as I mentioned, an HCV test also. Okay. This is data from 462 non-injecting drug users from the detox program. About 75% were male, 65% African American, 5% white, 29% Hispanic. Average age of 41 years. Varied patterns of drug use. Intranasal heroin reported by 40% for the 6 months prior to coming into treatment. Intranasal cocaine, 37%. Intranasal speedball, a mixture of heroin and cocaine, 13%. And smoking crack, 77%. So that there's a considerable variety in the non-injecting drug use of these people, with crack and intranasal use being the most common. Okay. This shows HIV prevalence and herpes prevalence in the this sample of non-injecting drug users. 19% were HIV seropositive, 60% were HSV seropositive. There were modest differences by age, with the older people being more likely to be herpes positive. A substantial difference by gender, with the females at 86% of them herpes positive, being substantially more likely to be herpes positive. There was the same pattern in HIV results, although that was not statistically significant. And the African Americans were significantly higher in herpes, with 64% of them herpes seropositive. Then we looked at the associations between herpes seroprevalence and HIV seroprevalence. We found statistically significant odds ratio of a little over 2. That odds ratio was relatively constant across the demographic subgroups, with the exception of the females. If you look carefully under the HIV positive column, you'll note that there were 26 HIV positive women, and all of them were also herpes positive. So that the odds ratio there is estimated by adding 1/2 and such, but all of the HIV positive women were also herpes positive. Okay. In terms of age and race ethnicity, again, the odds ratio is relatively constant around 2. So that we saw a relatively consistent relationship between being herpes positive and HIV positive, with the exception of the females, where all 26 of our HIV positive females were also HSV positive. Okay. We looked at current risk behavior among these subjects. This is risk behavior in the 6 months prior to the interview, so it does not reflect how they probably became infected with either HIV or herpes, but it gives you an idea of the potential for transmitting these viruses or acquiring these viruses. Substantial numbers are reporting sexual relationships with a primary sexual partner and unsafe sexual activities with a primary partner. Among the HIV negatives, that's up to about 40% reporting unsafe sex with a primary partner. Those people who are HSV2 positive are at considerable risk for acquiring HIV. And among the males here, we see substantial numbers reporting unsafe sex with casual partners, so that these males who are herpes positive are at very substantial risk for picking up HIV from unsafe sex with casual partners also. And there is a modest number of males reporting unsafe sex with commercial partners. You'll note that among the HIV positives, there's generally much less unsafe sexual activity compared to the HIV negatives. But there is no relationship between being herpes positive and herpes negative in terms of your sexual activity. We then looked at our female non-injecting drug users in terms of risk for transmission and risk for acquisition of HIV. Again, there were no herpes negative HIV positives. Among the HIV positives, there is modest levels of risk behavior with the exception of unsafe sex with a primary partner. In terms of these females becoming infected with HIV, we see very substantial numbers of them reporting unsafe sex with primary partners, and also substantial numbers of them reporting sex with commercial partners, trading sex for drugs or money, and unsafe sex with commercial partners. So that these females in particular are at high risk for acquiring HIV from either a primary partner or from a commercial partner. We did population attributable risk percentages using a conservative risk estimate of 2.0 for acquiring HIV if you're HSV positive. For females, almost half of the population attributable risk for HIV infection is due to herpes infection among these non-injecting drug users. For males, it was about a third. For the sample as a whole, over a third. So that in terms of HIV infection among these non-injecting drug users, herpes is clearly a major factor, particularly for the females. One additional concern is that recent modeling of the relationships between HSV2 and HIV transmission suggests that the importance of herpes increases over time in an HIV epidemic. So the problem is likely to get worse rather than better. Okay. Clearly, we need to address HSV2-facilitated HIV transmission. That's not going to be particularly easy. We should probably target injecting drug users as well as our non-injecting drug users. In more recent data, we see very high levels of HSV2 among the injecting drug users also. There is suppressive therapy for herpes. You can take a pill every day, and it suppresses viral replication. It reduces the frequency of outbreaks, and it's suspected that it may reduce HSV transmission and acquisition, although that has not been demonstrated yet. We need to have special emphasis on reaching females, where over 80% of them are HSV2 positive, and African Americans, where about two-thirds of them are HSV positive. And we have started a pilot project trying to do outreach to drug users in the community, bring them in, do HIV and HSV2 testing, and then take the HSV2 positives and try and put them on suppressive therapy. Thank you.